This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
The time now is 12 minutes past 11 o'clock as we continue the conversation, but getting into our View of the Nation segment, where we delve into critical issues shaping South Africa's political and constitutional landscape. And today we confront the looming question, and that is, could South Africa be heading towards a constitutional crisis? Despite the outward appearance of a functioning constitutional democracy, concerns are emerging among legal scholars who suggest a deeper underlying risk as well. And this discussion really explores the potential scenarios and implications of such a crisis in light of recent national elections and this evolving political dynamic as well. And to help give us some perspective this morning is Advocate Sipho Mandula. He joins us from the Thabo Mbeki School of Public and International Relations. Advocate Mandula, a pleasure to have you on the program this morning.
Refreshing morning, Kantlevin, to your listeners of our talk.
So as a researcher at the Thabo Mbeki School of Public and International Affairs, how would you define a constitutional crisis, particularly within the context of South Africa's political system?
You know, Kantlevin, one has to look at our constitutional making from 1993 to 1996. That is our first starting point, without looking at the crisis first, but looking at the advantages and opportunities of when there was a drafting of the interim constitution in 1993. But as it was finalized in 1996, there were already glaring moments of separation of the then National Party moving away from the then government of national unity. So even if we wanted to think of the constitutional mastering of power sharing, cabinet allocation, you are also guided by the same constitution. So in any debate that when you want to start on the coalition governments, or you want to talk about multi-party governments, or the government of national unity, the constitution has to be that base, has to be that what I'll call a guiding tool that you start with the constitution. Now, for a listener's sake, they will understand that in 1993, we had Article 88, which by then allowed for the government of national unity. It had 10 articles on it. So it was a very long article that was thought thoroughly to say, yeah, now, if you're going for a power sharing, how are you going to now allocate positions of cabinet, which are also the position of exercising public power? So when you have to understand constitution is that any representative, whether a member of parliament or a cabinet member, he or she is exercising public power. So in exercising public power, there's accountability, transparency. That's how I will just try to shape my intro on that level. Sure. But it is important for us to understand that at the moment, we are having what we say, there is no legal or constitutional framework of this arrangement that you only been told of the statement of intent and members joining. You know, members joining as if you are joining a WhatsApp group, you know. The way I see this arrangement, how it has panned out, that it seems that anybody can also be removed from the WhatsApp group because of the numbers. Because also what is important is the numbers of the voters that have elected you as a party to be in parliament and to also enter this debate of power sharing and of co-governing. Because the issue that when I was listening to some of your listeners, they are correct that we might have faced this constitutional crisis also in 2016. That's where we had hung municipalities. And I think even at this moment, we had a hung government. Hence, it was given 14 days to agree. And it was a constitutional imperative that after elections, within 14 days, there must be the first sitting of parliament. And that first sitting, it has only one purpose to do, is to elect the president and the speaker of parliament.
I'm glad that you also raised the reference made by one of our callers regarding the comparison to the crisis in 2016. But as things stand right now, do you believe there are specific indicators or even events which might signal that South Africa is approaching or already in a constitutional crisis?
Absolutely, Ntlawu. Looking at even the numbers of that, by tomorrow, as you are aware, many the IEC and other parties have been asked to submit their responding affidavits to the electoral court. We're already having a looming electoral dispute around elections, you know. That also connects our constitution, governance, and the rule of law. So it is important that, again, the issue of constitutional crisis that we are in is when you don't have executive also to lead the government. And at the same time, we might have lived the other one as you are talking about the cabinet positions. There's another view by other legal experts saying also there's a need to review your head of administration, meaning all your DGs also have to be assessed, have to be reviewed. And you might need to also advertise all positions of the DGs and DDGs, which is your director general. And also, you might have a constitutional crisis also if you don't also have a standing minister of justice that you need to also overhaul the National Prosecuting Authority. That is another view, again, that comes. So this constitutional crisis will also be not only begin in the parliament, it will also affect administration, it will also affect the judiciary, because that's where you need to be tied, that you don't have the arms of government being affected by this political, what I call political transitional arrangement. And others are even moving away from that. Even if you have a constitutional crisis, then you need to urgently constitute what you call constitutional amendments for you to accommodate this political arrangement or transitional arrangement of allocation of cabinet posts, which, like I say to you, once you don't have executive, it also affects the three arms of the government, where you'll have legislature, you'll have a parliament. Yes, it is constituted, despite that others are going to be sworn in only tomorrow. But you also have an intact judiciary. But if you have an executive that is absent, then you are going to lack political direction. Automatically, that will affect constitutional obligations of these members who have to be appointed.
It's very interesting you say that, but I also want to get at your view. What role do you recent national elections and these political developments that you speak of right now play in really exacerbating these constitutional tensions? I mean, could we be accused of just being or having this conversation and just being alarmist where there is no need for panic right now?
Indeed, there's no need for panic, but there are lessons learned out of this.
Sure.
Having seen that we are entering the third week of not having a cabinet, and also that also delays what I will call your medium term and a strategic framework of the state, that you need a 5-year plan of the state from 2024 to 2029. And secondly, you must understand that other nations or other countries, our neighbors, the regional community, the international community is closely monitoring what's happening here in terms of how do you deal with coalition governments when actually your point of departure should be a constitutional and a legal framework. But if there's absence of constitutional and legal framework, hence I raised the issue earlier that, yes, we might be seen to be, being an alarmist, but we are giving an early warning here, because in some instance, the role of analysis and the media is all to always give an early warning so that we don't have late warning signs that people say, but did you not foresee this was coming?
Right.
And that's where we are struggling also to can understand that with the national dialogue that is being punted by the president during the inauguration, some of us, we are saying, even in that national dialogue, we need to look at these issues around coalition governments or the co-governing. You don't have a national dialogue only for GNU, but you need to also look at modalities to say, now, what is our constitutional imperative when you have a power-sharing movement that we are seeing ourselves in?
Yeah.
And it's not the same like of what happened in 1994. And I read one article by the former Minister of Finance, Tito Mboweni, coming out very clear, saying that actually we are not in the GNU movement here. It's a coalition government. You know, so that's where you can see that already we have a constitutional misinterpretation or constitutional interpretation that is even contesting this notion of government of national unity or coalition government and constitutional vacuum that we are now having of not having executives being appointed or even selected. Sometimes it's not even appointments. It's going to be just elections of these cabinet members.
But Advocate Mantula, what are the key constitutional safeguards or even mechanisms, if you will, which are currently in place to in some way prevent or mitigate such a crisis? And how effective have they been historically?
You know, Kenya, it's a very good practice. Even if I know earlier you were talking about Kenya, Kenya was able to go through this when they had a tension between Uhuru and Kibaki, at sometimes Uhuru and Odinga. They had to bring the legal and the constitutional framework. But the safety pins, if I can tell you, is the issue that I raised earlier, the values of transparency and accountability of the state, of government. Another second aspect is the issue of public consultation, the duty to consult the electorates, even if you are doing these moves of political arrangement. And thirdly, is the issue of now consolidating the entitlement and the guarantee of all basic rights of the citizens, so that you are not trapped with a political crisis, which will affect economic and social welfare of the citizens. So you need to say the constitutional imperatives are there.
Yeah.
The Kenyan case study has been used, but also I see the international framework of bringing the German experience and the Ireland experience. Others are talking about the Germans, how they've managed coalition governments for 4 years. Others are showing the Ireland model on coalitions at the local government level. Remember also what we have done so far in this country, which I think many listeners are not aware of. We are already having a bill also before Parliament on coalition governments at the local government. So it seems that whatever we have put into place now at the local government, it will translate it to go up at the national and provincial level to say, how do you bring a bill or an act of parliament to manage these political coalitions or this government of coalitions? So that's where I looked at the scenarios to say, we are not late. We have started as early as last year to look at coalition's framework, and we need to put them into an act of parliament, but through public consultation. I think the consultations that have been happening behind doors by political parties, they need to know that there's a need to always consult even the ordinary people or the public that has also have a vested interest of the outcome of what will come out of this political arrangement of the cabinet allocations.
If there's one thing that the July unrest sparked, Advocate Mantula, is a discussion around potential triggers or catalysts that could lead to a full-blown crisis. But what are some of the, as things stand from your vantage point now, what are some of the potential triggers or even catalysts that could escalate the current political tensions into a fully blown constitutional crisis?
You know that there is an important issue, but we have a SADC model law on elections, and that's where the issue of election-related violence has to be looked into.
Yeah.
That the if we don't accept the outcome of the elections, that is also a conflict trigger and a constitutional crisis also. If you don't accept the outcome, you also have to approach the electoral courts. In many African countries, you don't have such process. Secondly, we've seen political parties who were contesting for power in May 29. We have political liaison committees that in those political liaison committees, whenever there's a crisis or a potential threat to conflict or to election-related violence, you are able to arrest it there before it can escalate. So that's how I'll say to you, the constitutional crisis in Tanzania is also that many member states of SADC, they don't follow the model law of elections. Again, in the region, we have the model law on elections that also touches on this issue of the constitutional vacuum that might arise post-elections. So we might be having a political crisis and a constitutional crisis, but it was born out of an electoral process. So what we are having now is that the electoral outcome also has caused this political and constitutional crisis, which needs a deeper thinking, a deeper consultation by the leaders of government, the leaders of various political parties, in consultation once more with the citizens.
So some are arguing at this point that this is not the first time that South Africa finds itself with no outright winner in the elections. When you look at the local government elections, which also saw the emergence of these coalition arrangements play out, some calling it a complete disaster, as we saw some of these arrangements literally breaking down right in front of us. But how might conflicts between call it central and local governments, then contribute to this constitutional instability? And what legal remedies exist to address these conflicts as well that we see play out at local government level?
You know, legal remedies will always be a parliamentary process of initiating a bill before parliament at the national level. I've already touched at the local government level that there's a bill already before parliament on coalitions at the local government. And I know this week there's a session we are having at the, where we are looking at the, both the case studies of Ireland as well as Lesotho. Mm. What has happened? Remember, our neighboring country also has been having the same crisis on its coalition.
Indeed, yeah.
Lesotho, as well as Zimbabwe. We cannot leave Zimbabwe as well during the time of Tsvangirai and Robert Mugabe. But I think here the impact in country is that it also goes to the core issue of governance. Developmental goals, that you end up not achieve your developmental growth, they also become stagnancy on economic growth. Because once we have the lack of functioning of the local government and also the absence of provincial and national government not being functioning well, it already creates a constitutional vacuum and a constitutional crisis. Mm. But like I said to you, the legal remedies, it also becomes how you also bring the law, how you bring the amendments to the constitution. And I said earlier, the interim constitution had a clause that was able to navigate and to guide how will you manage the political power sharing post-elections. But the 1996 and the post-election, now we are having a constitutional and a legal absence of how do you deal with this coalition governments in South Africa. And like you said, we never had these challenges before. It was only 2016. And also there, you didn't have a legal framework during that time. Mm. So it was what I would call a marriage of convenience, marriage of inconvenience. Others in the 2000s say it was a fat and sit arrangement. You know, so even at the national level, we might be finding ourselves in a fat and sit arrangement that we need to move away from and say, but how do we regulated through the law? So those are legal remedies, Ntanta, that you have to go back to the constitutional framework. Our foundation has to be the constitutional base. And it has to go through consultation, a vigorous consultation, a thorough ones that we had during our CODESA 1, CODESA 2. And I think that dialogue is being muted now by the former President Thabo Mbeki and the current sitting president that we might need a national dialogue. So I look at the national dialogue, Ntanta, being one of the a sphere of battle of ideas there that we could be engaging on modalities of how to come out of this crisis that we are finding ourselves in. Despite that, maybe it's me and you who are already giving an early warning of constitutional crisis, but I think let's wait and see of what will happen by the end of the week. But we need to be very closely monitoring the issue of constitutional development whenever you have this political crisis.
Advocate Mandula, grab a cup of tea or water or whatever you like that you have in front of you right now. We will continue our discussion in a short while, discussing some of these arrangements or coalition arrangements, but also looking at the so-called fat and set, which is another concept that we just found out about now, as we continue with this The View of the Nation, our segment where we delve into critical issues that are shaping South Africa's political and constitutional landscape. And today we confront the looming question, and that is, could South Africa be heading towards a constitutional crisis despite this outward appearance of a functioning constitutional democracy? Concerns are emerging right now among legal scholars, suggesting a deeper and underlying risk. We continue our discussion with Advocate Sipho Mandula after the headlines. Here's Nyakallo.
9 a.m. to noon. This is Power Talk on Power 98.7.
Indeed, this is Power Talk. The time now is at 27 minutes to midday as we continue this very insightful discussion with the advocate Sipho Mandula. He joins us from the Thabo Mbeki School of Public and International Affairs as part of the View of the Nation segment, where we are delving into critical issues shaping the nation and our constitutional landscape today. And again, we confront the looming question, could South Africa be heading towards a constitutional crisis? I mean, despite the outward appearance of a functioning constitutional state or democracy, Concerns are emerging among legal scholars suggesting a deeper and underlying risk. And this discussion really explores the potential scenarios, but the implications of such a crisis in light of recent national elections and also these evolving political dynamics. And speaking about that, Advocate Mantula, we have seen a number of developments politically, that is, with the MK Party joining the EFF and ATM and others in this alternative that we have seen emerge in the form of the Progressive Caucus. It has created a lot of debate around some of these schemes or partnerships or marriages of convenience, like some call them, or even a fat and set, which is one concept that we discussed a short while ago. From a constitutional standpoint, what are the implications of unresolved political disputes on the rule of law and democratic governance in South Africa? Because when you look at what's happening, some of these parties that I've mentioned, the MK Party as well as the ATM, for instance, they've already made it clear that they will challenge the outcome of this election.
No, one thing that we need to understand is that we do have a legal regulation that allows that whenever there are contestation of election results, you need to go to the court. But secondly, also, you might need also to have a formidable opposition in parliament. So for me to have all parties being in a GNU, it also means that they must not agree on everything. They need to engage robustly on issues that affect the country, national developmental issues, that is key areas. And exercising public power also must not be felt also like it's private power or it's special power. The issue of dispute resolution, I saw in the statement of intent also that they have also the mechanism that they have already developed, that in any instance that they don't agree, they will take the matter back to the dispute resolution committee to can outline those challenges that they'll be facing. But hence I say that the two also parties that have emerged, being MK and EFF and ATM, by raising the issue of electoral dispute, even if it was not EFF only, but MK particularly and ATM, I think we should test it once the electoral court hear their application and their dispute. And that's where the voice of reason will come from, the legal principles of understanding electoral mechanism of how were the numbers been reached for them to get those percentages, because it's also around the issue of the fail of the ICT during the election count that has been raised. But others are saying, do they have enough evidence also to bring to the court? Others will say, let's wait and see until there's a debate at the court or legal arguments being brought forward. But it is important for us to understand that our constitutional framework, it allows dispute resolution mechanism to be resorted to, rather than also boycotting parliament, boycotting the state, because that also will undermine the voice of the voters.
So, Advocate Mantula, there's another concept that's emerged in recent time where some analysts or even commentators are, for lack of a better term, comparing the 2024 May 29th experience to what we saw in the advent of democracy in this country, the 1994 project, although some will argue that this is a misplaced type of comparison. But what lessons can be learned from the past constitutional crises in South Africa, and how can they inform future constitutional governance?
That's a great question, and I think maybe some of our listeners who are in institutions of higher learning, they might also think of a paper, an article, they might think of even a module or a short learning program, how to deal with this instance. I would say to you, Tanta, like I said, 1993 we had an interim constitution that set the base, and the 1996 also constitution allowed for those arrangements to be done, and it will mean that even in the future, moving beyond 2024, is to always look at the constitutional amendment, because our constitutional amendment happens almost every year, but they hardly happens what I call in a ceremonial way of a full stop, a comma, and a wedding. It doesn't happen drastically in terms of a wedding of how to deal with a political crisis or a constitutional crisis of a vacuum of executive. And those lessons that will be learned again, Kantle, is that to have a coalition deal that is before parliament now, or local government, is also a good lesson that we can carry towards the national government also, to have a bill and act of parliament that will manage this. But the 1994 arrangement, as you'll understand, Tanta, by then, was also the issue of managing the crisis that we had since apartheid emerged in this country, that when the ANC went for the GNU in 1994, it had an overwhelming majority. There was no need for them to go into that arrangement. But they had to do it because they wanted to agree on that sunset clause. They had to agree also on the issue of balancing the majority rule vis-a-vis minority rule. But 2024, now we see how the voters have now made sure that their votes going to different political parties that are active in parliament, that we have more parties now compared to 2019 that are actively engaged now, your Rise Mzansi, your Bosa, Al Jamaa. So we have new parties that have emerged, your PA have emerged also. So we have parties that also need to be taken through what I call Constitutional 101 to understand the issue of exercising public power, the issue of exercising constitutional diligence to that we need to, because the main issue is economic growth even of the country, is development of the country, that we need to move forward as a country despite what we have went through. So hence you need that experience of the political and constitutional framework to build on the socio-economic development of the country. And we become a leading voice also in the SADC region and broadly into the African continent and even in the international community. And hence I was raising that the lessons learned for us will also have an impact on the neighboring countries. I spoke about the SADC model law. This week, actually, we are having a session where we are also looking at the key lessons learned from our elections in this country to say how will it impact on the SADC countries also, because they are closely monitoring South Africa that we give a better template to say when you have hung parliament or you have hung executive, how do you come out of it beside going into an electoral related violence? Because you will always have election disputes that end up become violent and you end up have vacuum and absence of government. Many countries, you see DRC, they just appointed their prime minister and the members of cabinet just recently after so long. So that shows you that even in the continent, we're still having these challenges, but I still insist that our constitutional framework that we had in 1993 could have been thought of, I mean, something that we can bring forward when we have this national dialogue. And the other issue is that that national dialogue, I don't think it should be called when there's a crisis only. I think there's a need for this country to consistently and clearly to always interrogate our state of governance, our rule of law, almost annually, so that we don't have to wait for a crisis to emerge and then we want to rush to the national conference, national dialogue, have resolutions, but those resolutions gather dust in somebody's office there, nobody implements them. So
I just want to ask you this before I forget about it. What will inform then these national dialogues? Or what should be key among these discussions that you believe should be had?
For me, it is also the issue of understanding the political leadership, transition of political leadership, the issue of understanding the priorities of the state. And priorities of the state are not going to be of the political parties, are going to be of the state, meaning you move away from political manifestos, you go to a government manifesto. What is the government manifesto towards its citizens? You go on the issue of the social cohesiveness that has been lacking in this country for the past 30 years. How do you unite South Africa beyond the question of ideology and race or color? But you also deal with the land question. If you go to the national dialogue, how do you address economic injustices that Africans have went through for the past 100 years? Because you cannot look at 30 years as if there was no apartheid before.
Right.
And at the national dialogue also, you need also at your national development plan. Is that national development plan going to be a solution to the crisis that you are in terms of economic growth, political leadership? As I have said, that we might also need to revise the National School of Government to say the National School of Government, what will be priorities of the government beyond party political deployees that are there? Because you had a problem also of political deployees that never understood what was the government vision. They only looked at the party political vision, but using the state resources. So you need to also align that, as well as the media. You need to also have a very vibrant and a vocal media in this country that is able to hold politicians accountable.
Advocate Mandula, we will continue this discussion. You've raised a number of critical points that I want to follow up on. And really, the focus of this discussion, I must reiterate, is to foster a deep dive into the complexities of constitutional stability in South Africa, providing perspectives from both research and advocacy as well to really illuminate the path forward amid these challenging political dynamics as we really try to understand what is at the heart, for instance, of this GNU, and also exploring the alternative that has come in the form of this so-called Progressive Caucus as well, that this partnership that we saw amongst other parties, alternative parties made up of, for instance, the MK, who recently announced that they'll be joining the EFF, has also thrown its weight behind this pact. So we dissect these issues more in a short while.
Speak up. Call the power line on 0861-987-000.
Indeed, that's the power line. That's where you also add to our discussion this morning with the advocate Sipho Mandula, who's been giving us his insights. And he will be also be listening to some of your questions or responses as well, if you may have something that has really caught your attention as you'd like to add to this discussion as well. Let's go to Soshanguve and speak to Junior. Junior, what's on your mind this morning?
Good morning and good morning to the advocate there. My response is triggered by when Advocate Mandula said that some of these people need to be taught constitutional 101 so that they should learn how to exercise public power. And, you know, I partly agree with that statement, but for me, it provides a partial answer to a very complex, situation, because of some of these political parties, the EFF emerged, come from the ANC as well as the NKP. And to a certain extent, you can argue that also the PA. And it is, most of these people, they know how to exercise public power. The reason as to why they left the African National Congress, for me, to a lesser extent, it has nothing to do with bringing efficiency or prudence in the management of state affairs or state resources. Some of them are politics of greed. These people are pursuing their own personal, interest. Let me give you an example. When MKP party members decided to boycott parliament, it doesn't mean that they don't understand how the constitution functions, because of some of these people, they come from the ANC. Some of them, they have served as bureaucrats in senior position within government, your Moyanis of this world and then Tekos of this world. They even have a former judge who's highly educated, so who's going to be a chief whip. So they know how public power is exercised. We must also look that we are not falling into a trap of people who want to perpetuate, corruption in all its manifestation, which for me, it has been a problem in this country for the past, 30 years. The apartheid regime, we know that it was corrupt, but it seems as if the whole corruption of the apartheid state was taken to the new, a democratic dispensation. Yeah. And the national dialogue that the advocate is speaking about, it must also address the issue of corruption. For me, that's the problem. The issue, the cancer of corruption is quite a problem for me.
Thank you so much, Junior, in Soshanguve. Let's get a response right now from Advocate Mandula to Junior's call. I think what stood out for me, Advocate Mandula, is the assertion that our problems are very complex and there's no simple silver bullet.
No, correct. And I think Junior is correct. But maybe Junior needs to understand that context. I said that even in exercising public power, there is an abuse of public power.
Yeah.
And I think he has correctly raised it now to say others are going to be using this public power for their own personal ambition, personal purposes. But it is important that when I talk about refresher course, when I talk about re-education of your constitutional obligation as a member of parliament or as an executive or as a head of state, it is what you need. There's always a review and a constant review that we have to do as the state. Hence, we have a constitutional review almost every year. I don't know whether listeners they know that there's a constitutional review every year where you look at, is this constitution responding to the needs, to the current needs? And also when you look at the current composition, like I said earlier, of the new political parties that have emerged, you might need to also induct them, put them into induction of understanding their constitutional imperatives that South Africa has moved now from the 1994 Mandela Foria, or what you call rainbowism Foria. It has moved drastically from 94 to 99 to 2004 to 2009 to 2014. It has moved. So you need that aspects can safeguard it. And I agree with him that in the national dialogue, which I did raise earlier, that the national dialogue also should deal with the question of corruption. You might have the State of Capture Commission that we are still now beginning to prosecute and investigate some of the people who are implicated. But you also need to have a national prosecuting authority and the SARS also in Canada. You need to also have a revenue service that is also capable to follow the tax evasion and tax avoidance that we've been having. And also for the prosecution to follow to those political elites that have been squandering their state money. So that's where you need that debate. But like I said, I still think that the exercise of public power has never been understood. And then, yes, you might have MTN, EFF being former members of the ANC, but I think they have a different ideological view beyond what the ANC is now representing.
You know, it also then begs the question as to whether there are any specific constitutional reforms or even amendments that could indeed strengthen South Africa's resilience against potential constitutional crises. Are there at this point?
For now, they are not, because like I said, for the legal and constitutional framework, they are not there, but we have the guiding principles of your constitutional values. You'll also look at your chapter one of your own constitution that talks about constitutional values, that we need to strengthen those values. But we need to also strengthen parliamentary accountability. And that's where the issue of parliamentary accountability and the executive and what we call checks and balances. The only issue that I said we had is that we have that legal and constitutional vacuum, but the principles are there, which could also be used in developing that new bill, that you have to deal with the new bill if you have to bring the government of national unity, because you can't rely on the statement of intent only, because it won't be a legal agreement. You need a legal binding agreement that will ensure constitutional stability. It will also ensure transparency, that it also allows the public engagement, the public participation process. So you have those basic principles in Tantra, but for the coalition government, for the co-governing, there is still missing points, like I said to you, the legal framework, how to make now these political parties to be accountable and also to be a binding agreement, rather than the statement of intent that is on the social media. It is on the WhatsApp groups of many people, but not many people interpret it in the same way. So you also have a question of interpretation, that in the future, make sure that even interpretation of legally binding agreements, it reaches the people without contradiction and without people being confused about the debate of Helen Zille and Fikile Mbalula just last week. That it seems that they really didn't know what was in the text or the content of that statement of intent.
So, Advocate Mandula, here's the setting. We are in, call it a dialogue or an imbizo, of course, not using taxpayers' money to put it together. But I want to get a sense, if you had the ear of some of these political parties and their leaders, as well as civil society involved in such a dialogue that I'm proposing right now, what advice would you give to political leaders and civil society in really navigating through constitutional uncertainties without compromising democratic principles of this country?
For me, then, I would have said to them, what they need to understand is the constitutional principles of openness, transparency, accountability. And secondly, I will advise them that in their engagement, there has to be no, there have to be open debates that are robust in terms of building this country and ultimately building the region. And thirdly, it will be for them to understand that election results driven will always push us to this point, that they need to be an acceptance also of the election outcome. But also after the acceptance of the election outcome, how to build this country forward. The issue of accountability, as I've raised, it should be in all levels. Political accountability, administrative accountability, very important. And also the robustness of the media also, how people also uses the power of the media that we have, whether it's a new social media that we have entered into, but let's also look at the power of the media of encouraging the debates that are robust in this country.
Yeah.
And finally, also to understand, country in this dialogue, it's not only for South Africa. We are setting a template to many African countries that are coming for elections now. Yeah, we have countries like Mozambique having elections in October, and Namibia.
Yeah.
And those countries also, they have a fear that their liberation movements might lose power also. So we need to, when we are crafting our national debate, our national dialogue, also look broadly in our region. How will it impact our neighbors? So that's how I look at that debate in Canada, that it should be seen in that way. And political parties also understand that their political manifestos, once they get into GNU, it now translates into government manifesto now, the government developmental duties now, to say now, let's now begin to build this country and leave our political differences aside. Rather, they should say that you rather focus on what unites you in terms of similarity rather than focusing on your differences.
As we consider all of this, Advocate Mandula, and it's an issue you touched on as well, what are the implications for international relations and foreign investment in South Africa? What are some of the implications we would experience in a constitutional crisis or in the advent of a constitutional crisis? What impact would this have?
You know what it had? You know, this Fitch rating that had also entered into the debate of this coalition, the AU warned them that don't interfere into the political arrangement of this country. So you have the rating agencies also that has also been the, what I'll call, the kingmakers. Mm-hmm. They are the ones who will say the ANC-DA coalition will be better for the economy. Others are looking at our BRICS membership, that it will also have the issue of the DA has an issue around our close proximity with Russia and with the current conflict between Russia and Ukraine. We have the issue of our peacekeeping missions in the African continent that others are saying it's a wasteful expenditure. We should not be embarking on this peaceful, I mean, in this peacekeeping mission.
Right.
So for at the international level, you have those challenges, but also at the AU level, where we are sitting at the Peace and Security Council, there'll be that implication once you have that constitutional crisis that we'll also be having a less voice at the continental level. We'll also be having a less voice on our SADC region, on the Troika of SADC. As you know, that even the Troika of SADC will be instrumental on the politics and the governance security of this region. So those are the implications that might arise. But like I said to you, Elian, that the rating agencies also have been also being, I could say, I mean, they've been irritating, actually. They've been mischievous for them to enter the debate of this political transitional arrangement. So you have already the economic powerhouses that are already looking at these coalitions, and they're having their own interests, leaving the ordinary people's interest, leaving the public interest out. So you need to have a public interest before you rush to the foreign economic interest, despite others are saying investment relies on them. But I think Africa and South Africa has got potential to stand on its own without this foreign interference of economies. And our international relations, you'll also need to have a good minister, a good DG that will be able, you know, to understand the dynamics of the GNU once you have a minister to navigate how to also harmonize all those views with the new parties that are part of GNU.
Was it EFF leader Julius Malema recently said that South Africans now have to digest or swallow what they've chewed? And I guess that's that moment for us, or a lot of us who participated in these elections, where the electorate is now in the aftermath of or the results being announced. We're now watching the developments and really monitoring and seeing how these parties are indeed going to work with each other, because the electorate has forced them to work with each other. Advocate Mandula, how important is public perception and trust in political and also judicial institutions, if I will, in navigating through these constitutional challenges?
You know, the public perception we have seen with the voter turnout that was very low. We should not run away that we have only 58% of people who voted, that we are still having a voter apathy in the country. We're still having challenges that the public is still trying to have confidence in our national prosecuting authority, how to go after those who have squandered their state resources. But I think the public perception also is the effective and accountable parliament that they will want to see. And they've been worried about the conduct of Parliament, how Parliament has been engaging on many issues, including the issue of Impalapala, many issues that how the public is losing confidence slowly. The erosion and the arrest of one of the commissioners of the Electoral Commission now recently can also raise some spanners to say that this our Electoral Commission independent as they ought to be. So the public, even the youth, the young people are also becoming worried in terms of the succession of leadership in this country, that where we were supposed to have your 30s and 40s in Parliament, we are having now the what I'll call the SASA beneficiaries going to the Parliament. You have the elderly people rushing to the Parliament and not having the young people. So you need to restore confidence by also having the young people being represented in Parliament, as well as women being represented in Parliament. That will also bring confidence.
Yeah.
But already, like I said to you, it becomes friends of friends and families selecting one another to go to Parliament. So that's where you have a problem, that people will lose confidence in the system. And also, the political parties, when they engage in the media, they are also contradict one another. But behind the scenes, they also collude.
Advocate Sipho Mandula wrapping it up quite nicely for us as we conclude our discussion on the potential for a constitutional crisis in South Africa. It does become quite evident that the nuances of constitutional governance and the rule of law are actually more critical than ever. We've explored the perspectives of Advocate Sipho Mandula, really shedding light on the complexities and risks facing South Africa's democracy. Bringing us to the end of this program, but we are back same time, same place, as I continue standing in for Lerato Mbele tomorrow. We do hope that you have indeed enjoyed what has been a very insightful series of discussions. From me, it's goodbye for now.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.